It's a hot, steamy summer night, July 1994. I'm sitting in my first apartment in Cincinnati, Ohio, watching the boxy TV across the room.
In mid-July, major telescopes on Earth and in space will be trained on planet Jupiter for an encounter that could be one of the most significant astronomical events in history.
I was glued to what was happening in space, possibly for the first time in my entire life, because a comet was hitting the planet Jupiter.
A string of over 20 ice and dust fragments from an ancient comet will plummet into Jupiter, causing massive explosions.
I was mesmerized by this story, and I awaited the first pictures of this explosive astronomical event.
Geologist Eugene Shoemaker, astronomer Carolyn Shoemaker, and amateur astronomer David Levy found the comet at the end of March 1993.
Oh, it's a lovely day.
I was thinking, what would this look like? What happens when a comet hits a planet? From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm your host, Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up. The show that takes you deep into the cosmos or just to the telescope in your backyard to learn more about what makes this amazing universe of ours so great. My guest today is David Levy, amateur astronomer, science writer, and discoverer of oh so many comets, including Shoemaker Levy 9, which ran into Jupiter.
Come July 16th, amateur and professional astronomers alike will train their telescopes on Jupiter. Whether the event goes off with a bang or a whimper, few astronomers will miss this cosmic event of a lifetime.
Now, I wouldn't say Comet Shoemaker Levy 9 completely changed my life's path. I was still in college. I eventually graduated with a history and education degree. But back in the summer of 1994, this was more than 3 years before an accidental job transfer took me from doing nature education at a city park to giving planetarium shows. That was my first astronomy gig. But maybe, just maybe, that fractured comet pointed me in a direction. Because soon after 1994, we had these other brilliant comets that followed. In 1996, we had Comet Hyakutake, which graced the skies with a skinny tail.
Crowds have gathered on mountaintops and deserts and stadiums and even city street corners to witness what has been called the comet of the century, Hyakutake.
And then in 1997, we had Hale-Bopp, which I think a lot of people remember because it was so incredibly bright up there.
Astronomers around the world are turning their telescopes to the northern skies to observe the biggest, brightest, and most active comet to visit the solar system in our lifetime, Comet Hale-Bopp.
Now, in the early 2000s, I was finally an astronomer at long last. I was working at the Cincinnati Observatory, and it was there that I met astronomer and co-discoverer of Shoemaker Levy 9, David Levy. Now, it's kind of funny because we're sitting around at a restaurant, and back then, we were all just assuming comets were going to, like, light up our night sky every year. We're just like, oh, yeah, another comet, another year. And David had just returned from an eclipse expedition somewhere or other, probably some exotic location, and he was preparing to do something no one had ever done before. That was observe a total solar eclipse from the continent of Antarctica. Now, I had never seen a total solar eclipse and told this comet guy, David, that I was just going to wait until 2017, you know, when the eclipse would pass through nearby Kentucky. And David gave me the dirtiest look and he said, "What? Are you crazy? Why would you possibly wait another decade or even another year? You got to see one. You know, you got to see all of them." Well, I didn't go to Antarctica with David, but he definitely motivated me to see the total solar eclipse in Greece in 2003. It was a cruise around the Mediterranean just for us eclipse chasers. And David was there too, and at the moment of totality, he was given the play-by-play on the PA system.
Look at the shadow coming into the west.
So that's David on the PA system, and he's saying over the boat, look for the shadow of the eclipse coming. So we're looking out from the distance and looking for the shadow of the moon sweeping across the waves. And then he says, all right, put your glasses back on.
glasses on. Look at the crescent.
Look up at the eclipse, which is still partial eclipse at that time.
Glasses off. Look at the shadow coming in.
And then finally, he says, take your glasses off and stare at the sun.
Glasses off. Look at the sun. We are now in total eclipse.
We are in total solar eclipse. It was incredible, indescribable. I was hooked. And I had David Levy to thank for it.
My name is David Levy, nicknamed David, and I am not an astronomer, not even an amateur astronomer. I am a stargazer, and I have been a stargazer since July the 4th, 1956.
Well, David, thanks so much for joining me, but so what happened on that memorable day?
Well, it was the 4th of July, 1956. I was at summer camp in Vermont. We were heading up back to our cabin, and I looked up and I saw a very faint shooting star. And I asked the other kids if they had seen it, and they said no. And my little 8-year-old David brain said, is this little shooting star just for you? And I put it away, and I've never forgotten it. Obviously, I'm mentioning it today.
And that's how it began. And then, of course, it led you to comets. And what is it about comets, do you think? What is it about them that inspires, you know, the average person and stargazer alike?
Well, comets are really so special to me. It offers a way for people a chance to interact personally with the universe. And to prove that, I would like to offer you right now my very favorite poem. It was Gerard Manley Hopkins, 1864, after he saw a comet come to Temple, and he wrote this poem. I am like a slip of comet, scarce worth discovery, in some corner seen bridging the slender difference of two stars. But when she sights the sun, she grows and sizes and spins her skirts out, while her central star shakes its cocooning mists. And so she comes to fields of light. Millions of traveling rays pierce her. She hangs upon the flame-cased sun and sucks the light as full as Gideon's fleece. But then her tether calls her. She falls off, and as she dwindles, sheds her smock of gold amidst the sistering planets. So I go out. My little sweet is done. I have drawn heat from this contagious sun. To not ungentle death, now forth I run.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. And so obviously comets have gotten hold of you, that's for sure. Take us back to 1993, and you co-discover a comet with Carolyn and Eugene Shoemaker, these great friends of yours also. And this was your ninth comet that you discovered together. And it all played out so normally. You know, I found a comet, you know, no big deal. But then it took this unforeseen turn. Tell us what happened, especially when you heard the news of what the comet was going to do.
Well, actually, we knew it was special immediately, because when Carolyn found the comet on a film that I loaded into the telescope, she said, I think I found a squashed comet. And so it was very unusual right from the get-go. But what really happened, what really was the highlight of my professional life, was on my birthday, May 22nd, 1993. I had heard from the director of the Minor Planet Center that something major was going to happen. He said, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but be ready for it. And he sent out two announcements. One was, the name was changed from Comet Shoemaker-Levy to Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9, meaning it was the ninth comet we had found that is technically in orbit around the sun and comes back periodically. And there was a number of things that I was reading, and one of them was something in the ephemeris of where the comet's positions would be that wasn't in any of the others that he had ever published. It was called the Delta J, the distance between the comet and Jupiter, because the comet was actually orbiting Jupiter rather than the sun directly. And I'm looking at this Delta J and noticing as time goes on that the Delta J is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And finally I said, Carolyn, the last number he has for the Delta J is less than the radius of Jupiter. And Carolyn looked up and said, David, we're going to lose our comet. There's going to be a collision, isn't there? And there would be. And the second circular that he came out with said that, in case you didn't notice, there is going to be almost certainly a collision starting on July 16th, 1994. And that moment was the crowning moment of my professional career.
Yeah, but how did it feel? I had to have a little mixed feelings. Have the comet Shoemaker Levy 9 and it's doomed. How did that feel? Or was it just like, oh yeah, I found the best comet ever?
Well, we got very emotional. Carolyn said, we're going to lose our comet. Her husband, Gene, was loading films for the night's observing, and he started yelling. He said, don't move. I got to see this for myself. And he rushes out, and he looks at the ephemeris and the announcement, and he's almost in tears. He said, in my lifetime, we are going to see a comet strike a planet. And, I mean, the guy was almost in tears. And the rest of the afternoon, believe it or not, we were pretty quiet. We knew what it would do to the comet and what it would do to us. And it was really very, very special.
Oh, I love it. And you're also the author of several books, including Making Friends with the Stars. And, you know, I always tend to gravitate towards people who generally enjoy what they do. And you can always tell that you love what you're doing. What's your secret?
It's a very simple secret. I go out every night, open the observatory, and I look up at the stars. And no matter how bad my mood might be that day, it always offers me a sense of peace. My latest book, by the way, is called Stargazers, Finding Joy in the Night Sky. And it is a compilation of articles I've written over the last 10, 20 years and came out just a few months ago.
Well, excellent. You've been an inspiration to me, from seeing an eclipse with you out in Greece to just chatting. I always enjoy talking to you, David. Thanks so much.
Thank you so, so much. I'm really glad to have been here today.
So why have comets been so disappointing lately? I mean, by lately, I mean like the last 25 years, because the last really good comet, and I mean really good comet, was Comet Hale-Bopp back in 1997. And it's really been a comet drought. This has been a very, very long time. I'm still trying to like live in the past, I guess. I'm still thinking about Comet Hale-Bopp and Hyakutake back in the 90s and thinking, what is going on? Why haven't we had another really good one since then? And there's a big problem with comet predictions, because comets are fickle beasts. They do what they want. We can hardly tell what they're gonna do and how bright they're gonna get. And so some that look really, really promising often fizzle out. And that's pretty much what's been happening the last 25 years. So what can we do about this? We need a good comet. We're due. Let's get a comet up there somehow. Let's do it. Looking Up with Dean Regas is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds and I created the podcast in 2017. Ella Rowan produces and edits our show and is so young that she's never seen a truly great comet. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to tell you again about what it was like back in my day seeing Hale-Bopp, I know. Janelle Walton is our vice president of content, and Ronnie Salerno is our digital platforms manager. Our theme song is Possible Light by Ziv Moran. Our social media coordinator is Hannah McFarlane, and our cover art is by Nicole Tiffany. I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.